Excuse me, recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the IGO-INGO Access Securitive Rights Protection Mechanisms webinar held on Thursday, the 12th of October, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Phil Corwin. Please begin.
Sorry, Terry. Carlos Gutierrez, I'm on the phone only. Excuse me.
Thank you, Carlos. Noted.
Okay. Okay, and welcome, Carlos. Welcome all. On behalf of my co-chair, Petter Renforth, and myself, we thank, we're very gratified that we have much better participation than usual today, some from working group members who haven't been able to join all our calls, some from council members, and we appreciate that. This webinar is slated for 1 hour, so let's get started, and its purpose is to bring everyone up to date on the history of this working group and where we're at and what we're expecting to do in Abu Dhabi in a few weeks at ICANN 60. So the first slide here is the project timeline. This working group began in the dawn of history back in November 2013. There was a predecessor GNSO PDP, I believe, is on permanent protections for certain IGO names and acronyms, and there was a recommendation for an issue report on IGO-INGO. INGOs are non-governmental international organizations on their access to curative rights, better known to most of you as the UDRP and the URS. ICANN provided alternatives to litigation for the protection of trademark rights, just so we're all on the same page as to what those CRPs do. This PDP was initiated with charter adoption in June 2014, and then there was a considerable gap between then and January to May of 2017 when we published the initial report for public comment and reviewed that comment with 46 comments received, including one from the GAC and 21 from IGOs and 4 from different parts of the GNSO. The reason for that considerable time gap between the start of this PDP and the publication and solicitation of comments on the initial report was that we reached a point where we realized that since a great deal of what the IGOs were requesting in terms of policy changes was based on a claim of very broad immunity from judicial process, and as no one on the working group had any expertise in international law by which we can make any informed judgment on those claims, which in turn would determine what policy recommendations we would make, we decided that we needed input from an impartial expert in this field of the law, and we needed to obtain some modest funding from ICANN to retain that expert, and then we had to do conduct a search to locate an expert who could do it research in a timely manner for the amount of funding we had available. And then, of course, we had to wait for the expert to look into the matter, draft the report, get back to us with an initial draft, and work with the expert to refine that to be fully responsive to our focus, and all of that took about a year. So that was part of it, but that getting that expert report from Professor Edward Swain at George Washington University Law School was invaluable. We really could not have made informed decisions on key aspects of our work without that expert input. So in June 2017 at ICANN 57, we discussed modification of the initial recommendations with the community. We got further feedback, and we discussed different options we were looking at for resolution of the last issue before us, standing in the way of the final report, which is what to do if it arose that a UDRP decision brought with a complaint brought by an IGO found against the domain registrant, and the domain registrant exercised its rights to seek a different determination in a court of mutual jurisdiction, and the IGO prevailed in its defense claim that it was immune from the jurisdiction of that court, and that's the final issue on which we're going to be surveying working group members over the next week to get an indication of where we do and don't have consensus on the options before us. So looking toward Abu Dhabi, we're not going to have a final report published at that point. We are going to have know at that point, with that additional feedback from the working group, what all the elements of our final report will be, and we'll be unveiling them for the community and soliciting feedback there. And then with that feedback taken into consideration, we hope to publish a final report and transmit it to the GNSO Council before the end of this year. So we see the light in the end of the tunnel, and we're going to be happy to wrap this up. So let's go through our preliminary recommendations. Number one, with no change recommended from the initial report, we recommend no changes to the UDRP and URS be made, and no specific new process be created for INGOs, including the Red Cross Movement and the International Olympic Committee. And I'd add that we've had participation from folks representing those groups, and no objections to this determination. And we also are recommending that to the extent that the policy guidance document is compiled, the working group recommends that this clarification is regarded INGOs be included in that document. And basically, we did that because the key issue with IGOs was their assertion of immunity from judicial process. Professor Swain basically told us that the scope of that immunity would differ from country to country, which is where the issue would come up in national courts based on the law of the countries and their analytical approach to issues of sovereign immunity. But INGOs, being private organizations, had no such issues, and we didn't believe it would be appropriate or necessary for us to differentiate them from any other private parties who might access the UDRP or URS, that they stand basically, other than having some international status, they stand in the same shoes as any other organization doing, many of which are charitable organizations doing good work, but not having a status that would require a different approach for these CRPs. I see my co-chair's hand up, so let me halt. Petter?
Well, thanks. I just wanted to add that we not just had legal representatives for INGOs in our working group that confirmed that this was a correct conclusion on recommendation one, but we also initially went through a great number of both URS and UDRP disputes where INGOs have been involved, and we could conclude that they actually are using the systems, and that I think among all the cases we went through, there was just one case where one of them had lost, but otherwise they had used the current systems with a, for them, very good result. So that also indicates that there was no need for any changes. Thanks.
Okay, and thanks for that feedback, Petter. And by the way, if folks, I'm going to take the first half of this, so maybe people can hold questions on the first half till I conclude in about 10 minutes, and then Petter will take the lead on explaining the second half of this presentation. So on preliminary recommendation number two, for this one, we are changing our recommendation from the initial report to the final report, and this is some evidence that we took those comments very seriously. Our original recommendation was that an IGO, there is this document, the Paris Convention, Article 6 tier of the Paris Convention, provides certain protections for IGO names and acronyms in national trademark law systems. It doesn't confer trademark rights, but it does provide for certain protections in national trademark law systems. Those protections are obtained by the IGO simply communicating to the World Intellectual Property Organization that it wishes to invoke its six-tier rights, so it's a very low barrier to obtaining those rights. We had originally stated that taking that action would provide an independent basis for standing to bring a UDRP or URS separate from having registered trademark rights. That recommendation attracted a significant amount of criticism that we should not be presuming any basis of standing other than trademark law rights, that in certain cases IGOs were sending these communications that others did not consider to be genuine IGOs. So we've dialed back on that recommendation and saying that an IGO may elect to fulfill the requirement to have standing to complain, to be a complainant in the UDRP-URS by demonstrating compliance with the communication and notification procedure pursuant to Article 6 tier, but that this is an option in a case where an IGO has certain unregistered rights. It hasn't registered its trademark rights in its name or acronym, and it must provide a additional factual evidence to show that it has requisite substantive legal rights. This is an alternative mechanism for standing. It will not be needed where the IGO already holds trademark rights, as there it could proceed as the same way as any other trademark owner, and that whether it's in compliance with Article 6-2 will be considered as determinative standing in a decision made by the UDRP or URS panelist based on the facts of this case, and this recommendation is not intended to amend or affect any of the existing grounds upon which the UDRP or URS panelists have previously found sufficient for IGO standing. So basically, evidence of making this assertion to WIPO would no longer automatically establish standing. It would be evidence of standing that could be considered and with final determination made by the UDRP panelist or panelists, depending on the number hearing the case. And this is entirely consistent with existing UDRP rules and practice, which allow complaints to be based on common law or non-registered trademark rights in certain situations. This would simply direct the panelists to give due consideration to this WIPO notification when there's no registered trademark rights to be the basis of a complaint. So I hope that's clear. Moving on to recommendation three, this is another change. We're recommending that this recommendation be deleted and not contained in the final draft. Here we are not recommending any specific changes being made to the substantive grounds under UDRP or URS under which a complainant may file and succeed on a claim against a respondent, as we believe that bad faith registration and use concept already covers a very broad range of offensive activities, including those covered by scope of Article 6 tier protections. And that where UDRP and URS panels should take into account the limitation enshrined in Article 60 of the Paris Convention in determining whether a registrant against whom an IGO has filed a complaint registered and used the domain in bad faith. So basically, we no longer need this recommendation because we're no longer saying that notification of WIPO in and of itself establishes an independent basis for standing. We've dialed that back to being mere evidence. Originally, when it was going to be an independent basis for standing, as there was some slight difference, although pretty consistent intent, between the Article 6 tier protections and the UDRP and URS protections, we were going to give some instructions to panelists. But that's no longer necessary, and frankly, any of the potential uses to which a bad faith registration and use domain owner might be putting a domain to bad use when it's identical or similar to an IGO's name or acronym would already be covered by the UDRP and URS, because it would generally be mimicking the IGO and pretending that it was the IGO for various nefarious purposes. So there's no need for that, so we're going to drop it. Now, this brings us to, let me see where we are. Okay, this starts on page 7 and 8, and this is a long discussion. Petter, do you want me to just start this and then hand off to you in the midst of it after the first two pages? Or do you want to handle it?
I can start. Just see if... yes. I can start with this.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'll just say this is the last thorny issue we're dealing with and been grappling with for a long time, even though the number of times this situation will actually arise will probably be extremely rare if it ever occurs, and I'll hand off to Petter. Go ahead.
Thanks, Petter here. So, welcome to the preliminary recommendation number 4, we're still discussing the details of this recommendation, but we in our initial general recommendation, first phase here, we stated that on the issue of jurisdictional immunity, which IGOs may claim successfully in certain circumstances, but again, not INGOs. We recommended that no change be made to the mutual jurisdiction clause of the UDRP and URS, as ICANN curative rights process are in addition to and not a substitute for existing statutory rights, and ICANN has no power to extinguish registrant's rights to seek judicial redress. And I would say this conclusion was also supported by our external expert when he went through what the existing legislation around the world on this aspect. And then a policy guidance document to pre-prepared to include a section that outlines the various procedure filing options available for IGOs. So for example, they have the ability to elect to have a complaint filed under the UDRP or the URS on the behalf of an assignee, agent, or licensee. Although some comments we got from some IGO representatives, some had nothing to say against this. Others said that they would not accept to file a dispute through an assignee or an agent. And that claims of jurisdictional immunity made by an IGO in respect of a particular jurisdiction will be determined by the applicable laws of that jurisdiction. And again, we as said, we asked an external legal expert on this topic, and when he went through the legislation and practice in a number of countries and court decisions, he concluded that there was no clear yes or no on how a national court would decide when it comes to the jurisdictional immunity. So it still is something that has to be considered by each court. It's the first step. So next slide. There were two options published for the public comment period, where a losing reticent appeals to a court of mutual jurisdiction, and an IGO succeeds in asserting its claim of jurisdictional immunity in a court of mutual jurisdiction. So the recommendation option one at that time was that the decision rendered against the reticent in the predecessor UDRP or URF shall be vitiated, or option two, the decision rendered may be brought before, and here we still have not concluded if we should recommend a specific arbitration entity, but in any way, before an arbitration entity for the normal review and determination. And we noted that both these options got some support from various commentators, with the IGOs in favoring option two. And we have deeply reviewed all comments and concluded an impact analysis. We also considered additional alternative options, some built on certain elements in either option one or two. What we will see on the next slide is, we don't call it option one or option two anymore, because they are, these three possible options are based on the comments that we got under the comment period, but also what we have discussed and come up to from working group members. As George said in the chat, for a period we had up to six options, but we considered that these were in fact some recommendations on specific details that could be forced into or put into the original option A or option B. So here is the three options that we are discussing right now in the working group. The option A is where a losing reticent challenges the initial UDRP URS decision by filing a suit in a national court of mutual jurisdiction, and IGO that succeeded in the initial complaint also succeeds in asserting jurisdictional immunity in that court. The decision rendered against the reticent in the predecessor UDRP or URS shall be vitiated, which is more of similar to the original option one. And option B, in relation to domain names with a specific with a date when they are created, when the domain name is originally created and registered, the option A applies. And in relation to domain names with a creation date on or after the policy effective date, option C, that we'll come to in a few seconds, shall apply. And then also that after 5 years or 10 instances of option C being utilized, whichever occurs first, ICANN and the various dispute resolution providers, including any who have administrative arbitration proceedings under the new option C will conduct a review to determine the impact, both positive and negative, as a result of trying out option C. And I'll not make any specific comments on these two, but I think that option C, where we come to, is in fact the one that may be including more of closer to what the others have looked for to solve these kind of disputes. So let's look at option C here. Where a complainant IGO succeeds in the UGRP-URF proceeding, the losing registrant proceeds to file suit in a court of mutual jurisdiction, and IGO subsequently succeeds in asserting jurisdiction immunity, the registrant shall have the option to transfer the dispute to an arbitration forum, meeting certain pre-established criteria for determination under the national law that the original appeal was based upon. With such action limited to deciding the ownership of the domain name, which is also basically the original dispute, no specific monetary parts involved with who shall own the domain name. And the respondent shall be given 10 days or a longer period of time if able to cite a national statute or procedure that grants a period longer than 10 days. To either inform the UGRP-URS provider and the registrar that it intends to seek arbitration under this limited mechanism, or to request that the UGRP-URS decision continue to be stayed as the respondent has filed or intends to file a judicial appeal against the IGO's successful assertion of immunity. So this is for both parties involved. And we can note here that the working group discussed some fundamental elements that would need to be included in any arbitration option, such as applicable substantive law and procedural rules and venue and panel selection and language of proceedings, availability of discovery, available remedies, awarding of cost, enforcement considerations. And we have, in fact, discussed also some of these points. And we'll see if we stick them to as recommendations, or how we will proceed with that. But we think it's necessary to also, in our final recommendation, come up with some points on how this would be done. Option C would be done in a practical view. Okay. Next slide. So, some further notes on option C. These are the some of the practical topics. So, an IGO which files a complaint under the UGRP-URS shall be required to agree to this limited arbitration mechanism when filing the complaint. If subsequently it refuses to participate in the arbitration, the enforcement of the underlying UGRP-URS decision will be permanently stayed. And I think that some of the comments we have got from IGOs during the works, at least when we talked to them verbally, it seems to be positive to the possibility to go directly to an arbitration phase after the decision, if the decision is to be complained. So it could be good to have this possibility to have that statement already on this stage of the procedure. And the parties shall have the option to mutually agree to limit the original judicial proceedings to solely determining the ownership of the domain name. And subject to agreement by the registrant concerned, the parties shall also be free to utilize the limited arbitration mechanism described above at any time prior to the registrant filing suit in a court of mutual jurisdiction. And as we see it, it's this is also very familiar to the current UDRP proceedings. So it's not specific news here on this phase. And in agreeing to utilize the limited arbitration mechanism, both the complainant and the respondent are required to inform ICANN. And we have not evaluated the consensus on any of these ABOC specifically, but I'll leave it to Phil to make comments on that.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. And I'm about to switch phones. I just noticed the phone I'm on is about to lose power, so just give me a second here. Okay, sorry for that delay. I just wanted to add a few comments to kind of set out more of the framework for how we got to option C and why I personally believe it's the best one before us. Again, we relied heavily. I think everyone knows that the IGOs and the GAC have consistently asked for a separate CRP solely for the use of IGOs, in which there'd be no appeal to a court of mutual jurisdiction, but any appeal would go straight to an arbitration body. The working group rejected that for a number of reasons. One, we didn't believe ICANN should be predetermining the success or failure of a claim of jurisdictional immunity in a particular case, that was outside ICANN's remit and in the remit of national courts. We also thought ICANN should be very cautious about creating new CRP procedures separate from the existing ones, which are the only CRPs that ICANN provides as an alternative to statutory law and litigation. They're all based on trademark because of the intimate relationship between domain names and trademark. And we couldn't find a clear alternative legal right other than trademarks that could be the basis for such a procedure. And we also don't believe that ICANN should be creating legal rights that aren't clearly based in broadly recognized global legal principles. So noting that, and noting also that this is going to be a very rare situation, but nonetheless had to be dealt with. Option C protects the IGO's right to raise its immunity defense from the get-go if there's an appeal to a court of mutual jurisdiction and doesn't put its hands on the scales to influence how the court determines that claim. So it preserves that right for the IGOs. It further preserves the right of the domain registrant to have some appeal from the independent original UDRP decision if it feels that the original decision was mistaken. Because we thought it was important to continue that option. And finally, while it's not, it does allow the domain registrant to exercise their right to go to a court of mutual jurisdiction, option C may in fact encourage much greater use of arbitration in these appeals because it does permit both parties by mutual consent to go directly to an arbitration board to determine the disposition of the domain without going through the court, and there may well be that both parties, particularly the domain registrant, prefer that because of the greater speed and lower cost that the arbitration route generally provides. So I just want to provide more of the context of our thinking for how we got to option C. Thank you.
Thanks. And I see Mary's hand up.
Thanks very much, Petter. And I'm just raising my hand because I noticed that Brian Beckham has asked a question in Adobe Connect chat. I believe he's having some technical issues. And since we also have some people who are only on audio, perhaps I can question and either you or Phil can respond on behalf of the group. Brian's question is as follows. Can you clarify, if I read option A correctly, that if an IGO wins the UDRP case and also wins in asserting its immunities in court, then the UDRP decision that was in its favor would nevertheless not be implemented?
Yeah, Petter, yeah, I think that's the correct way to read that option.
Yeah, Phil here. Let me chime in. That is a correct reading, and that is why I personally do not favor option A, and for a number of reasons. One, it would not be neutral in regard to the IGO's assertion of its immunity rights in courts. It would basically say, if you win, you lose. You've taken yourself out of court, and the original decision that you won will not be enforced. Number two, recognizing that some UDRP decisions are mistaken, there have been successful appeals. Nonetheless, it would be believed that those who believe that the original decision was correct, that the cyber squatting identified by the panelists would be permitted to continue. And third, something we became more aware of in between the initial report and moving on to the final report is that under current UDRP practice, if an appeal is brought to a court of mutual jurisdiction and is subsequently dismissed for any reason, the stay on enforcement of the UDRP decision is lifted and the enforcement goes forward. So this would be a reversal of initial of current UDRP practice and policy. So for all of those reasons, I have concerns about it, and not just on whether it's the right way to go, but whether it could ever get through counsel, much less the ICANN board. So that is a correct reading, and I've expressed my personal concerns regarding it. Thank you.
Thanks. Petter here, just throw in, because I also saw Brian's additional questions. And as I say, this, we have still these three possible options to discuss. But again, if I speak personally, I, as well as my co-chair, see that option C is the one that could be a workable way to solve the topic for a working group, even if nothing is 100% perfect solutions. But we have considered all inputs, all aspects, and come to the conclusion that option C could be a possible and an acceptable way to solve this this topic. I saw some hands up, but they're down again. So, and I just read from the chat instead. Paul said absent UDRP. Oh, yes, James Blado. Go ahead.
Thank you, Petter. It was I that raised my hand and then put it down, and I apologize. I put my statement in the chat that I probably should remember that many people are on audio only and can't see what we're typing. So for the benefit of those folks, record, I am not been following this work of this PDP super closely since it finished the public comment, but I agree with Bill's assessment of option A. That scenario that was described is unlikely to pass the council, and it is unlikely to pass the board, and it's likely to generate, I'm sure, a fiery mention in the GAC communique. So it really just doesn't pass the what I'll politely call the smell test. And I'm glad to see that Phil, at least in his personal capacity, and I hope that this is a sentiment that's shared amongst the working group, is looking at other options, including option C, because option A, I believe, is a non-starter. Thank you.
Thanks. Phil?
Yeah, thanks for that feedback, James, and none of it surprised me because we've had prior conversations regarding the progress of this working group. The one thing I'd like to note before Petter gets back and goes through our last recommendation is that other than this one, on which we have not yet taken a consensus call in the working group, we're about to do that after this webinar so we can get a feel for where the working group members are by next meeting, which will be our last call before Abu Dhabi. All the other recommendations that we've discussed and are about to discuss have very strong consensus support within the working group. We don't yet know the degree of support or opposition for options A, B, or C regarding recommendation 4. And again, all the other recommendations relate to things that come up in just about every conceivable UDRP or URS, whereas recommendation 4 relates to a situation that, to our knowledge, has never arisen and may never arise, but we had to take account of it. And there's some irony in the fact that the rarest circumstance has taken up the most amount of final consideration in our work, but so be it, and we'll see what the will of the working group is after this webinar. But thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Pervo here. And may I also add to option B that, as you see, there are two parts of option B. One is that it should be the solution should be split up. Option C should be used for domain names that have been created on a specific date, namely the policy effective date, and option A for those domain names that are created previous to that. That one part that is discussed, but it also states that the solution we have, we will find out and decide upon will be reconsidered and studied after 5 years or 10 instances of cases, and that's of course something that is normally done in all these ICANN policies. So that will also be a part of option B in that case. Have a working group looking at how this dispute resolution policy have worked out. So I'll come to the final recommendation, number five, that in respect of GAC